You are listening to Making Bank, where we uncover the mindset and success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business.
Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the mindset and the success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business today. I'm really excited for today's guest and honored to have Jordan Harbinger. Welcome to Making Bank.
Thanks, man. Appreciate the opportunity.
Cool. Yeah. I know there's maybe 0.5% of the population out there that doesn't know who you are.
That's fine.
Through your old podcast, everything else. Why don't you give them like a quick 10-second, 30-second spiel, whatever. Let them know.
Sure. So I spent 11 years hosting the Art of Charm podcast, have left that company, no longer host that show. Now I do the Jordan Harbinger show because I'm really creative with the titling of my show. I actually just figured people were like, you need to name it a benefit. You need to do this.
Right.
And I was like, well, people might just be looking for me in general because I just ghosted the whole Art of Charm brand. So that made it easier so people can search for the Jordan Harbinger show and find us. But I spent 11 years building one of the largest podcasts in podcast land with 4.1 million downloads every month and just trying to rebuild the new show brick by brick. But now, instead of baking the bricks in a clay oven for 11 years, I know where all the bricks are and they're in a neat little pile in my backyard, so to speak, to take the metaphor way too far. So it's been a lot easier growing, even though the new show's only been up for not even a month. It's already a double-digit percentage of what took me years and years and years. I mean, I think right now where the Jordan Harbinger show is something like where the Art of Charm was after 6 or 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
so it's
incredible.
Much faster. Yeah. Of course, markets now are different too. You
for
can
sure.
build a show.
More places.
Back then, back when I started it, you'd go, people go, what do you do? Oh, I do a podcast, and they go, oh, what's that? More than half the time. Or I'd say, do you know what a podcast is? And they go, I think I've heard of it. Now people go, yeah, obviously I know what a podcast is. And even a 60-year-old person would be like, yeah, of course I know what that is. I'm not that old. So the game has changed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Plus, many more mediums to get on and everything else too, for sure.
Yeah.
So, well, no, that's awesome. Well, since you brought it up, let's maybe kind of start off a little bit and talk about, you know, the differences of what you're doing now today to accelerate your show's growth, you know, which you didn't know back in the day.
Yeah, man, where do I even begin? First of all, you can easily, in fact, throw all the tactical stuff off the table.
Cool.
Really what's been the biggest lever was relationships. And I know that sounds maybe a little bit cliche, but I'll tell you what I mean.
Okay.
Back when I first started the show, I remember asking my own friends if they would be a guest on the show. And I remember getting texts back like, this is stupid. Nobody cares about your podcast. Or like, you know, lose my number. And I was like, my friends suck. But also, they were right. I mean, who knew what this even was?
Right.
Nobody cared. There were less than 1,000 podcasts in the iTunes store at this point. Most of which were not active because they had 3 episodes and nobody cared about it. But now that I'm trying to rebuild, I'm calling people that I've met over the last 11 years, friendships that I've maintained. People introduced me to you, for example, and they're like, oh, this would be really interesting for Making Bank. That took me years. You know, I would have to scrape for an intro for months and months and months and find somebody who can introduce me to, say, Ben Greenfield Fitness.
Right.
And now I could text Ben whenever I need something, and he could do the same.
That's
and it's
cool.
just instant, yeah, I'll say it tomorrow, and I'll do this. And Pat Flynn, I'll mail for this tomorrow, no problem.
Cool.
That took years and years and years to build. Now that legwork is done because I have these relationships in place. So something that took 6 years to build before, where it was, how do I promote this? What people listen to podcasts? Who can help me promote this? Now I can just make a spreadsheet of 100 people. And it's not people that I haven't talked to in 3 years. It's people that I've regularly hung out with, talked to, seen at events like this. And I can ask them for a favor because they could always ask me for a favor. And it builds back so much faster than I thought.
That's awesome. So taking that premise and the networks and the relationships and everything that you've created there.
Yeah.
Say somebody's brand new and they're doing something. They don't have that. But they're here now and today.
Right.
So what would you say? Okay, guys, this is kind of that first thing to create that connection or...
Yeah, I've got a couple of principles that I've followed. Thankfully, I followed them over the last 10 plus years. Because They're really easy. It's really easy to write about networking when you're like, I'm on top of the podcast.
Then it's easy, yeah.
Yeah, I'll make a product about this. But sure. I actually really believe in these principles, and they've been really, really helpful for me. And they'll be helpful for you, too. So the first one, you know Glengarry Glen Ross, where they say, ABC, always be closing. So we do ABG, always be generous or always be giving. And what that means is, aside from having an awesome ring to it, what that means is help other people without the expectation of anything in return. And I know that that sounds like very Dale Carnegie, Pollyanna, but the truth is it makes helping and networking with other people easier because it reduces the cognitive load. Like if I'm thinking, what can I get from Josh right now? I don't really need anything, so I'm not going to interact with him, or I'm going to prioritize something else. That's bad, because then anytime you interact with somebody, you're forced to think, what can I get from them? And that the answer usually is going to be nothing, because you don't know what you need in 5 years. You only know what you need right now. So you'll ignore all these great people. You won't make as many friends. You won't make as many connections. And that's a problem. So reduce the cognitive load by just helping other people without expectation of anything in return. And the other thing, the problem that you run into then is scalability. So if I'm a graphic designer and I'm only helping people with graphic design, I have a very limited pool of opportunities of people that I can help. But if I'm willing to connect them with other people in my network, then it's scalable. I can make 15 email introductions in a day. I can't make 15 website designs or whatever in a day. And so, and that would be free, and I'd end up going broke and not being able to pay the bills, but I can send 100 email intros in a day on a Saturday morning before lunch, and you're never going to have that many. You won't have that many in a month, even if you're a really active networker. So what it does is it reduces the cognitive load, and it makes it scalable so that you can create relationships among two people. So if I introduce two other people in my network, they both kind of owe me one in their head, and I don't mean that in a keeping score kind of way. I'll get to that in a second. But I get to that meaning that they can then do their thing, and then in 3 years they might go, oh, yeah, you introduced me to this CPA that I've been working with. Saved me a ton on taxes. Thanks for that. So I don't have to help people within my own realm of expertise. So it opens up a ton more opportunity for me to help other people in a scalable way without the expectation of anything in return. So that's sort of like the three-prong fork of that one. The last piece that I would say is really, really important is don't keep score. And what keeping score is, that's the expectation of something in return. But this is sort of even deeper than that, because a lot of people create these covert contracts in their head. And the reason it's a covert contract is because one party knows about it and the other party has no idea that there's an agreement in place. And the classic example in interpersonal, I'll put a dating example on it because it's more fun than a business example. So you pick this gal up from the airport five times. You drive her to the airport five times. Maybe she's your neighbor or some friend you have. And then she's complaining about guys she's dating. And in your head, you're just thinking, one day she's going to realize that I'm so nice and I'm always there for her. I'm the guy. And then, you know, nothing happens. And for months or years, you're pining, right? Because you've got the covert contract. Eventually, she's going to owe you. And then one day after three glasses of whiskey or six, or depending on your tolerance, you're like, Angela, I love you. Right? And she's like, what the hell, Josh? I thought we were friends. And then you ruin that whole thing. You've poisoned the well because you've got this covert contract. But the problem is it only poisons your side of the relationship until you have an emotional meltdown on the phone like that. And it works the same in business. You know, I introduce you to somebody and you introduce me to somebody. Great, we have that sort of even exchange. But what if you're well connected and I'm not? So you introduce me to five people and I'm like, oh, here's a smoothie. And then you're like, this guy sucks, right? I hate Jordan. He never reciprocates.
It's the right kind of smoothie.
It depends on the smoothie. Fair enough. But it becomes a covert contract if you're really thinking like, come on, man. You're never holding up your end of the bargain. Because there's no bargain. My bargain is you're helpful, and I like that about you. And in your head, you're like, this a-hole never returns the favor. And that's a really big problem, because a lot of us do this subconsciously. We don't even necessarily do it because we're selfish or because we're doing it on purpose. I might just be really helpful. I might be doing this thing in a scalable way. And then I might say, hey, can you mail out my ebook about stuffed chinchillas for decorative purposes? And you're like, it's not really a fit for my audience. I don't really know if I want to do that. And then I'm angry about this because in my mind, you owe me, right? This goes along with all of these sort of subconscious processes that happen with networking. And if you bring this to a conscious process, you start to say, you know, I'm helping without the expectation of anything in return, but I kind of have this little expectation built up. And you got to stamp it up.
Gotcha.
Look, if someone's using you and they're constantly, hey, can you introduce me to this person? Right. And then you're like, hey, can you let my cat out? I forgot. I locked her in the basement when I went to the store, and I'm not going to be back
sure.
for a day because I went to my in-laws. And I'm like, I don't know. I'd have to get up off my couch. Sorry, man.
You
know,
yeah.
So something like really easy. Then you're like, this person's just not, they're not interested in helping me. They're very selfish.
Sure.
So you have to be careful, though, because it's better, in my opinion, caveat, it's better to help 100 people and have 90 of them never have the opportunity to help you back.
Right.
And some of them might use you, but 90 won't, right? 90 might just not ever be able to help you because maybe you're networking down, as we would say. Mm-hmm. So you're helping newbies maybe
right.
get off the ground.
Sure.
You're helping them with a show like this. You're helping them start their business, whatever. Maybe they're never really in a position to do much more than write you a nice review or
right.
comment on YouTube. So that's fine. But the 10 people out of that 100 who are able to help you, maybe you helped someone 4 years ago, and now they're enormous on Instagram.
Sure.
That is worth it. That
oh, yeah.
one
yeah.
person out of 10 is more than worth it, because usually they are like, man, you helped me huge.
Right.
Here's a giant favor that is so disproportionate compared to the email introduction that you made for me 10 years ago. And I'm experiencing that right now with
That's
the launch
cool.
with the launch
yeah.
of the Jordan Harbinger show, from the ashes of my career at the Art of Charm, to put it way too dramatically. I'm starting the Jordan Harbinger show, and people were going, you're going to find out who your friends are. And I was like, oh, this is going to be awkward. I'm not looking forward to this. Because when you hear it from athletes and musicians,
yeah.
it's because they're alone, right? And
right,
all their
yeah.
friends left them because they're not rich or something. For me, it was the opposite. I just met you like a minutes ago
oh,
through
yeah.
an introduction, because I think it was Jeremy Weiss and
Jeremy
John
Weiss,
Borgman
yeah.
were like,
yeah.
hey, our friend
yep.
really needs help getting the word out about the Jordan Harbinger show because he's got to rebuild his audience. And you were like, cool, man.
Yeah.
And those guys don't have to help me.
Right.
I've hung out with Jeremy Weiss a bunch, but
yeah.
he could have just been like, eh, you're dead to me. Right? Like, he didn't have to do that. And all these people that I never have been in contact with ever.
Mm-hmm.
are like, oh, hey, I heard this thing happened. I know we don't know each other, but you want to come on my YouTube channel? I get 300,000 views. Or
right.
something. And I'm just blown away by this.
That's
and
cool.
when I express my surprise, a lot of people go, well, you have been making deposits into the Social Capital bank account for 11 years with the show, with recommending stuff, helping other people
sure.
via email. And I do that without the expectation of anything in return. But I never really thought I would need something in return. And now that I do, I'm like, oh my God, thankfully.
For sure, yeah.
I did that. Because I could have just as easily not have helped all these people without the expectation of anything in return, saved myself a lot of time, and been totally screwed right now.
Right now, yeah.
Yeah.
That's, no, and I think you're 100% right. I mean, when I do my show, or I have people like, oh man, I saw you interviewed so-and-so, is there any way you could connect me up with them? And I mean, I'll ping them, and like, long as they're totally cool with it, I hook them up, and I mean, I don't worry about whether
yeah.
they can refer anybody to me or connect me to anybody. And
how much harder would it be if you were like, I could make this intro, but I got to think about who you could introduce me to. And so please send me your entire list of content. I mean, how
right.
are you going to evaluate
Well,
this?
I've had people like that.
Really?
Oh, I mean, just like, hey, I was like, hey, I know, you know, you connected with so-and-so. And they're like, yeah, well, can you help me out with this?
Oh,
so you know,
that
and
sucks.
It's like, I'm like, well, why didn't you ask me that before I even asked you that?
Yeah,
you know?
It sucks.
And it's like, so you find out, like
yeah,
you said. And
you set just, up that quid pro quo. It's so
I just kind of move on past it. Don't worry about it. It's just...
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right? Because even if I'm comfortable with that...
Right.
I don't want to have to owe you a result.
Yeah, I don't want to be like, oh, because you said so. So
right.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like if that's the relationship that we're going to have, where it's like, now I owe you something... That's it. One, it's either a covert contract or an overt contract.
Right.
And two, it's like, really? You're not going to do me a favor unless I do you a favor first? So if
yeah.
I need something and I can't help you, you're not going to care at all.
Right.
Because that's the type of person who's going to be like, you're dead to me because you don't have
help.
A platform or something anymore.
Yeah.
Or if they rung up a couple rungs on the ladder, or they end up on the top of the totem
sure.
pole in a few years, they're going to be like, oh yeah, I don't need you anymore. So, yeah, you know, go fly a kite. And I just don't want those people in my
arena. Yeah.
There's too many people at conferences like this, and in our circles, we don't have to put up with the quid pro quo crap, that there's just no reason. That type of behavior, in my opinion, should just not even be tolerated. So if you're the kind of person that sends up quid pro quo, or you're thinking, well, I'll help these guys if I can get something in return, stop doing that. You probably mean well. You're probably just trying to hustle and grind. It makes you look like an a-hole. Stop doing it.
You heard it right here.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to dive in a little bit. You've interviewed some amazing people over your 11-year career.
Yeah, yeah.
What are some of the top things that you've been able to extract that you've applied in your life to help move forward?
Yeah, some of the relationships.
I know it's a huge question.
Yeah, it is, yeah. I've had like 700 interviews. I should actually count, because people go, how many interviews have you had? I'm like, well, if you subtract the fan mail Friday and you didn't, and I have no idea. It's like 600.
No idea.
So the answer is, I'm not sure. A lot of what I learned about the relationship stuff, those principles that I just expressed, a lot of that came out of the shows and the interviews that I've done.
Sure.
But a lot of that was sort of meta, where it was like, I didn't have Simon Sinek say, by the way, help other people without the expectation of anything in return. It was more like, if I keep helping all these other people, it keeps coming back to me and I don't even have to try.
Sure.
And sometimes I'm really way too busy. Oh, look, here's a scalable way to do it. So that was a lot of meta. But what I've really learned from a lot of these freakishly busy folks is the way that they manage their time. You get a feel for a lot of people's personalities. So you'll get somebody on where you think, this person's so great.
Right.
And then you find out the way they manage their time and the way everything is conducted behind the scenes is a hot mess. And you go, oh, I never really want to do that. And then other people who you thought, oh, this person's like, nah, I'm not that excited about them. But offline, they're so pro and their assistant's awesome. And they show up on time and they're really giving. You think, I like this person a lot because they didn't have to do this for me. Those types of scenarios have been massive for me. So it's not just the one takeaway I got from somebody telling me something.
Sure.
It's seeing how big deals conduct themselves behind the scenes. Because I interviewed Mike Rowe, you know, from Dirty Jobs.
Oh, yeah.
And he was, like, he was sick, and he was under the weather, and he was super cool, and his people were super professional, and they called me, and they're like, please don't use the video. Mike's under the weather. And I was like, oh, shoot, I filmed the whole thing, and I had a videographer. And he was like, it's fine, you can use it. And I went, I'm not going to use it because you're just being really nice.
Yeah.
I want to listen to your people because
they know
better. Yeah. And they're like, no, Mike, you look like crap. Don't do it. Right? But I was really impressed by how cool he was. It wasn't like on in camera and then like robo dead to me mode. I'm overusing that phrase. I'm aware of this. It like offline. But other people that I've talked to who I thought would be really cool, and I won't mention their names, they just aren't.
Right.
And you go, oh, crap, this whole like fun, likable guy. It's just, that's your performance?
Yeah.
That sucks.
I've had that,
I know. It sucks so much. So it's been great to see, like, Russell Brand and Mike Rowe and Shaq be even cooler than they are in your mind, right?
Yeah.
And it's been so disappointing to see other people who are 10,000 rungs below them on the ladder be diva a-holes. And I just go, me and my wife were like, okay, mentally note this for like 5-10 years.
Sure.
When you've had it and everybody's filming you and you're just annoyed by it and hopefully things are on the up and up, to just never be like that. Because 30 seconds in an elevator snubbing someone taints their impression of you for your entire life.
Yep.
And you never know where you're going to run into that person again, man.
I know.
Because this world is so small.
It's funny. I literally just had something similar happen. Like, somebody had been trying to get, you know, interview, and they've committed every single time, and 4 times have canceled.
That sucks.
And, like, as you said, they're on lower, but, and like, people like Dave and John or some of these other, they always show up. They're here.
Yeah.
Never want, you know, never an issue. And it's, but it is. It's, you're like, what? But, and nobody would ever think of it because the person's like fun in public and out there. Oh, he's so likable. Why would he do that?
Yeah.
4 times.
He's
a really good actor.
Yeah. Well, we see a lot of this now, and we won't go too far down this rabbit hole.
Right.
We see a lot of this now with the whole Me Too thing, where you're like, oh, Louis C.K., he's so great. He did what in front of 6 women? How? Wait, hold on. You know, you just, and you go, oh, and you're just crushed.
I know.
Right? And then you're like, well, I'm not as crushed as your career, Louis C.K.
So, tell me, so obviously when we got this all scheduled, your wife helped out a lot.
A lot.
So, how involved is she with the business? And
super involved. Cool. And I'll tell you, before she came on board, everybody, I know you work with your significant, do you work with your wife?
We do, yeah. So that's what I thought. We started a skincare company, so okay. She runs the face of it. I handle the behind the scenes digital stuff.
That's what I thought, yeah. So before I brought my wife on, I don't know if people told you this, they're like, don't work with your wife, you're going to ruin your relationship, you're going to hate each other, it's going to result in a divorce, and it's going to ruin your business.
Right.
This has been awesome. She's been working full-time with us for at least three and a half years.
Awesome.
Such a great decision. But I will say that probably there's some wisdom in not working with your significant other, because although it worked out for me and it was a matter of necessity because I had fired my assistant and I really needed some help, and she turned out to be somebody who, go figure, actually cared about the business and actually cared about
right,
me.
Yeah, who would have known?
Wasn't mailing it in like my other assistant was. It worked out really well, but I also know tons of people who work with their significant other and it's a nuclear wasteland of a relationship, and everything and all their ish comes out in their business, and then it all comes out in their marriage, and they can never turn off the office because they live together. So I think, and I would love to hear actually your wisdom on this, even though you're interviewing me. I feel like setting boundaries of like, okay, stop checking your email. It's 11 p.m. We're watching a movie. Stop. You know, stop interacting with people on social media. Turn your phone off. Setting boundaries and also making sure that you're not slave driving the other person.
Right.
Maybe she slave drives you. I don't know. My wife works.
Probably. No.
But like you really do have to set those parameters.
For sure.
Or you can end up going, I don't have a life outside of my business because every time I'm not trying to work, I'm with my spouse and she's working.
Right.
And you just gotta turn it off. You gotta have to force it.
Oh, you do, yeah.
Especially if you have opposite schedules. Like Jen, my wife, is more of a night owl. So she'll be working at night and I'm just like, I can't even spell my own name right now. It's after 8 p.m. So she'll
head in the bed.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So she'll be going full blast at emails and stuff. And I'm trying to go to sleep, but then in the morning I'm like, all right, let's do this. And she's like, F you.
Party time, radio up.
Yeah, she's like, no, coffee time.
Yeah.
Time for yoga. And you have to let people work on their own schedule if you're married to them. If they're in your office, you can slave drive the crap out of them, do whatever you want. It's your management style, right? But if you're married to them, you gotta put up with a little bit of a, more of a flexible schedule or you're gonna get strangled.
No, definitely. And I'll touch base and I'll ask you kind of what couple principles or what kind of things that have helped you guys. Mm-hmm. I noticed for us, I mean, especially, I kind of resisted it for a little while, but it's been pretty two solid years now that just helping grow the business. And it's been good. I mean, just being able to work together. It takes some time because you got to figure out, oh, well, you know, why are we butting heads on this thing when we're both kind of heading in the same direction, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of once you start to figure some of those things out, you know, and kind of like her role is the face of the company, and mine is the digital marketing, overseeing that, because I know that area. And once you kind of like, I don't want to talk about how this skincare hair is going to do this and how it's going to do that. That's where she's great at it.
Yeah.
And let her do that and let me do that. And then we kind of come together to help move everybody towards the vision and stuff. Yeah, you know, and I think for me, in her, I'll try to speak for her.
Yeah.
But
be careful.
We've integrated, I guess, so we got three kids, so we've integrated everything.
Wow.
So instead of like, oh, well, let's try to balance the business and balance the family, because it's always going to be out of balance.
Sure.
You're balancing as we integrate. So like, you know, our kids, they have their own businesses.
They're just making the skincare products in the basement.
Well, no, my
dad. Can I see the sun? No.
You're locked in here. Well, no, it's like our daughter created her own pet products,
pet
products, because she saw what the skincare stuff was doing, and it's like, oh, pet care's got to have the same thing.
Wait, how old are your kids?
My daughter's nine, and I got twin boys that are seven.
So your nine-year-old daughter has her own
for the last year and a half.
That's insane. That's amazing.
You go right online to paleopets.com, boom, she's right there. Yeah.
I feel like I've heard of that, actually.
Probably. She's got little ads out there. She does her Facebook lives. And
that's
incredible. So we've tried to integrate. They can do whatever they want, but they want to do what we're doing.
Yeah.
And so I think integration, but also having the time, spending the time. She goes to bed earlier, like you.
Yeah.
I work late, so I get out, and from 2 to 4 hours, I can hammer out a ton of stuff and get it done. And I'm not bogging anybody down, not feeling, oh, well, I need to go spend time with them or anything like that.
Yeah.
We already did all that.
They're asleep also, probably.
Everybody's asleep at that point by 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock
at night. That's the best way to do it, man.
But
I don't have kids yet, so I am curious how I'm going to end up. I always joke, I'm like, How young is too young to teach them how to edit audio?
Yeah. When, as soon as they can move the mouse.
Right, exactly. I'm like my producer, Jason. I'm like, hey, man, you might have a few assistant producers coming into play pretty soon. He's like, oh, crap, who? And I'm like, I don't know. I got to have kids. And then when they're 5 or 6, watch your back. They're going to be, you know.
They're coming editing, to help, yeah.
They're going to be normalizing the audio levels.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So I guess we got a couple more minutes left. Yeah. But what have you guys, maybe a couple things that found that have really worked for you that help bring it up to that next level?
Yeah, so working with my wife.
Working with your wife, yeah.
So I'm in a different situation than you because my wife is technically like my administrative person or assistant.
It's like flip-flop.
But as you know, she's going to also tell me what to do when she needs me to do something. So she's really good about that. And we balance that role well. But it sounds like you're partnered up with your wife.
You have to, really.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only way to get it done and I think
your way makes a little more sense because I sometimes, and we don't get in fights or conflicts about this per se, but maybe that's just because she's a nice person, my wife. I could tell her what to do, but that would also change the dynamic of our marriage because I'm not telling her what to do inside of our marriage all the time either. But so I assign her things, but I do have to lay off and go, well, if she's taking a nap or she prioritized something else, I'm not like, where's that LinkedIn brief, you know? So you have to let it go a little bit.
Right.
But you also, if you're in an office environment, you can't really do that around other employees because then they're like, well, okay, wifey gets special treatment.
Sure.
This is kind of BS.
Yeah.
So she has to be at a partner level for that and also be treated as a partner, even if the task or role that she has is something that you wouldn't necessarily hire a partner to do.
To do, right.
So
she's just part of that.
Right.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to have the elevation of, like, the respect level is, like, partner.
Right.
The duty level, responsibility level is of partner. Doesn't really matter what the task is.
Sure.
Right? So it doesn't matter if they edit the audio or they're holding the camera. They have to be, if they're your spouse, they've got to be at that level.
Right.
Otherwise, you're going to end up with conflicts inside the relationship, which is obviously just going to burn down the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And that was subconscious at first for us, and I realized it because when I was with The Art of Charm, the old company, before the Jordan Harbinger show, the other guys in the company who I was actually legally partners with, they were not super nice about that stuff.
Okay.
And that was, there was friction there.
Some friction, yeah.
And it was like, crap, is she the admin for the company, or is she like my admin?
Right.
So that caused a little bit of tension. And so we really had to consciously go, okay, this is your actual role.
Right, define it out.
And this is your actual boss.
Sure.
And these guys can assign you things, but they can't be jerks just because you're my wife.
Right.
Or something like that.
Right, okay.
So you got to be really careful with that if you have other people in play, other partners in play. If it's just you and your wife and some other help, it's probably going to be a million times easier.
Yeah, I mean, we have 25 employees, so it's you know, and she kind of handles all that. I handle that.
Great.
You know, I got a small team that works on my side.
You have a team of people that will tell you that you're right when she tells you that you're
right. That's right. Got it. Mike.
It's a good way to be.
Well, cool.
You're right, Josh.
Well, it was really awesome. Why don't you tell people where to find you?
Sure. Yeah, so if you listen to podcasts, or if you don't, you should. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show, or you can just go to jordanharbinger.com/podcast, and you can find everything there. There's a couple handfuls of episodes up now, the new show, and each one solves a problem. Each one has worksheets because there's practical stuff to apply. And so if you like learning and you like practical stuff, that's what we do on the show.
Nice. I might steal his worksheet idea.
Steal the worksheet idea. It's really good.
I like that.
Otherwise, you have to absorb everything. It just doesn't work that way.
And they don't want to take notes all the time and everything else. So maybe steal the worksheet
idea
and give it to you guys. No, it was an honor to have you on here.
Likewise.
Really appreciate your time today and taking a few minutes out to come on
over
here. So thanks for coming on Making Bank.
Appreciate it.
I am Josh Felber. You were watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to Making Bank. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And sharing is caring. Follow Josh Felber on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram for more. You can also listen to Making Bank on Amazon Alexa, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and watch on Apple TV, Success Thinkers Network, Amazon Fire, and YouTube.